Exodus 21, without further ado. Lord, we do thank you that we can gather. I'm grateful for Jake and for Josh to be able to cover while I was away. Thank you for so many of our great leaders in this church, so many great men and women that serve in so many different capacities. I'm really spoiled in so many ways. So I want to just say thank you, Lord, for that. Thank you that for now, this evening, to get kind of back to what our custom is, our tradition, verse by verse, we want to look and see what these things have to say to us. Of course, the application is really so important. It's critical we get it. I don't want to say but or however. It's just there's also the simplicity of it. The more Bible as a whole we understand, the more sense it makes, and then in general, the more rightly our application will be lived. So as we just get into your word, again, would your word get into us, our hearts, our minds. So Wednesday evening, I'm sure in a lot of ways there's a lot of us that are tired. We're halfway through the week. We're already wore out a little bit. So we commit this to you. As we look at this one chapter this evening, please guide our time. And Jesus, we ask it in your name. Amen. Here, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this really tacky thing. Lifesaver. I didn't want to be crunching on this the whole time. So, all right, chapter 21. A couple weeks ago, we went through the Ten Commandments and a couple other just general laws, information that the Lord needed his people to have. And then it says, chapter 21 of the book of Exodus, verse 1, now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. So here's some more specific things after the specific law of the altar. Here's a whole bunch of stuff for the people to know. And I'll tell you what, as we kind of work through this, I'm going to kind of go off on a couple of side notes with this. But think back, we studied this a few weeks ago. Think back to chapter 18. Right, as Jethro came to visit, his father-in-law Jethro came to visit. He's like, hey, son, what are you doing here, man? You can't keep up with all the needs of all the people. You need to appoint some leaders, some judges, some rulers to help you with some of these kind of minor cases. You need help with this. So as we get into the specifics of these laws, I'm sure all these men that were appointed to that are thinking, whew, oh good, rather than, I don't know what we're supposed to do. There'll be definitive, this is the word of the Lord, this is what we're to do, this is how we're to handle these cases that will come before us. Really important that there would be this consistency to it. So again, these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy, verse 2, a Hebrew servant, he shall serve you 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free and pay nothing. I'm just going to say it right away. We don't like this. Right away we think, man, how does that fit in our culture? What are we meant to do with this? I'm going to make a bunch of comments about some of these specific things that we'll see in this chapter. And I also want to make sure I'm clear here. It's not like, well, that was for like, you know, 5,000 years ago or whatever, 4,000 years ago. So this really doesn't apply. It doesn't. Thank you, sir. It really doesn't apply, you know, for us today because no, but there's things that we need to know and there's principles. Thank you so much. There's principles behind this. Much better. Principles that are important in regards to just the simplicity of it. The value of human life. The value and the valuing of human life. So several things here just right away in these, even just there in verse 2. These 6 years he shall serve, and the seventh year he shall go free. This is setting up for what we'll study in, you know, some chapters to come. For it's setting up for the year of Jubilee. It'll be an important demarcation through the ages for the children of Israel. Several notes here. I want to make several notes about this, specifically as it says, a Hebrew servant. So that would be their brethren, right? And notice really this third word, at least in the New King James Version here, Exodus 21, verse 2. If you buy, might have a different translation. If you purchase one of your brothers, like all right away, we're already put off by this. So a bunch of notes here. I'm going to have seven notes about what this is and what it's not. First of all, this is not the typical slavery of every other culture. If you're a note taker, I want you guys to really jot these things down and kind of, you know, you don't have to commit them to memory, but give some thought to these things, especially again as we work through these coming chapters. This is not the slavery of every other culture. It's not the brutal, degrading slavery of most every culture through history. Like, oh, that's how it was, you know, 4,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago. It's certainly not. There's still brutal, degrading slavery in the world today. This is not what this is. And this will become more clear in a few moments, but it's not this brutal, degrading slavery of every other culture. Secondly, the Bible is not responsible for slavery. I'm going to make some more comments about that later, but people are going to say, well, see, the Bible introduces, this is nonsense to think that the Bible introduces slavery. The Bible is not responsible for slavery. And that should be about one of the most obvious statements in the world at this point. At this point in Exodus. They just left Egypt, right? 400 years as slaves in Egypt. And Moses is like, man, we should do the slavery thing. That's not what's happening here. He did not invent this. God did not say from heaven, let's definitely follow suit with the Egyptians and do that whole slave thing. That's not what's happening. It existed way before Moses. And I, not being a historian, I'll just make the general assumption that the Egyptians didn't come up with this either. It existed, it has existed throughout human history. This is a night and day difference for what's being seen here. So much so that thirdly, the laws concerning bond slaves should have helped to eliminate slavery. Again, number three, just general notes about slavery and bond service. The laws concerning bond slaves or bond servants should have helped to eliminate that terrible, degrading, brutal slavery of every other culture. Fourthly, I think it's important to really notice this. The first words of this section indicate that Israel was to respect life. So how about this as a fourth statement? Israel was to respect life. Israel was to respect life. And again, the words of this section, the first words of this section, the introduction to this really indicate that. Israel was to respect life, was to protect life, was to respect and protect the dignity of mankind, was to have value for human beings, and particularly in context, to value bond slaves, bond servants, just as the first words of chapter 20 speak of what God did for them as slaves. I mean, this is just the chapter before this, right? And God spoke all these words, chapter 20, verse 1, saying, I am the Lord your God, Yahweh, your Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So like, that's the preface to the Ten Commandments. You used to be slaves, I brought you out of that bondage. So again, the introduction to these comments, and I'll say it in a plural, the introductions, plural, to these comments speak of what God did for them as slaves and how they were to value life just as he valued their lives. So as they cried out, God, would you please deliver us? And he did. He expected that of them, expected them to value life, to protect life. Fifthly, none of this was intended as bondage. None of this was intended as bondage. Again, if you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh, he shall go out free and pay nothing. None of this was intended as a lifelong, zero rights for you slave type of bondage. And here's an important thing, kind of as a several side notes to this fifth concept. It was not supposed to be this. This is several different things here. You might become a slave to another Hebrew if, sounds terrible because I feel like I'm that, who's that comedian? You might be a redneck if, you know, that's not what this is intended to be. But you might become this if you lived in extreme poverty and could not escape it. In fact, Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 39, if you're a note taker, you might look into that. Leviticus 25, 39 gives some comments about that. So if you lived in extreme poverty and could not escape it, you really, in that day, in that time, especially in that culture, in that part of the world, you really only had so much for opportunities. And there's so much of what we don't get in our culture. Like, you've got opportunities around here. You know, I remember this back at the Bible college. You know, we'd have students or potential students that would apply to the school like, hey, we'd like to come. Okay, you know, here's the tuition. And like, well, I need some scholarship money. Okay, well, you know, take it case by case and see what we can do. And how much can you pay? Nothing. Okay, zero, that's a hard number for us, you know, as faculty to swallow. Like, $5? I mean, anything you can do. Like, do you have family? Well, yeah. Did you talk to your family? Your grandma, grandpa, somebody that might be able to, yeah, we'd be happy to help. Do you have a church family? Do you have a pastor, you know, whatever, that might be able to say, yeah, we'd be happy to help. Like, start somewhere, but zero is always a tough. At the same time, there's people that are like, I have nothing. And in that culture, you could be in extreme poverty and have no way to escape it. There just was not a whole lot. And there wasn't a whole lot of ways to escape. And so it's so fascinating what the law of Moses does to provide for, to tend to the needs of people. So that's one of the ways you might become a Hebrew slave, is if you are already in extreme poverty. By the way, I mean, there's so many things with this that we just don't get in. It's not our Western minds. It's not in our American minds. It's just modern life coupled with those things. You know, think about even in Jesus's day, as he physically walked the earth, the disciples, like, we don't understand how big of a deal this was for them to leave their father, leave their boats, leave their nets, leave the fishing industry. Come follow me. It wasn't just like, yeah, if this whole Jesus thing doesn't work out, I'll just get another job, you know. I'll go down the store and work at the supermarket or something. The supermercado is probably hiring. I'm fine there. It didn't work that way for you to have excused yourself from that. You were on the verge of extreme poverty. So there, it was just kind of a knife edge for so many of these things. At any rate, some people would, this was the best way for them to escape poverty. Secondly, notice this in verse 7 of our chapter here. If a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. Verse 8, if she does not please her master who is betrothed to himself, engaged, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. We'll get to this in a little more detail in a few minutes. But if a father intended his daughter to marry into another family, that's, it's not like she's going to be a slave. She's all yours. Take her away. That's not what was happening. It was, oh, you want to marry my daughter? Well, then I can't afford a dowry for her. So can she just work for a while with you, for you, and before you marry her as she's engaged to you? Interesting how different cultures, even still today, not specifically this, but I was talking to a friend of mine just yesterday where, you know, his daughter's engaged to be married, and the fiance's family is from a different ethnicity, and it's kind of normal for them, commonplace for them, for the after they get married, for them to live at home with mom and dad for a little before they branch out. And so it's, there's still some carryover with certain of these things. What else? Why else might you be a slave to another Hebrew? 2 Kings chapter 4 talks about this. You might be totally bankrupt. You might have been doing great, and so we're nowhere near extreme poverty, and then hit bankruptcy. 2 Kings 4 talks about this, and so that's probably the best thing for you to do. Exodus chapter 22, verses 3 and 4. If the sun has risen on him, this is the thief, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He shall make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, whether it is an ox or donkey or sheep, he shall restore double. So if you were a thief who could not afford to repay what you got busted, pay up, man. That's why I stole, because I had nothing. Well, tough tootsies, you got to pay for it. So you would sell yourself into slavery. So there's a lot of interesting things with that. And important as we look at this, because let's just be honest. This is where it's funny for me, is what we are as Calvary Chapel. we teach the Bible, right? I never want to be in that category. We teach from the Bible. I hope every church in America teaches from the Bible at least. Like, for pity's sake, just open it. At least teach from it. But what we do, we try to teach the Bible, right? And I think that's important. And one of the main reasons we do that is because I think any pastor in the United States of America, any pastor in the world, should be able to say to his people, and you should be reading your Bible on your own. And as we, God's people, are reading the Bible, if you're anything like me, there's sometimes I come across passages like that. Yeah, start in Genesis. Okay. Just reading it, like, all right, there's a few things. Am I really supposed to read all those names in the gene? Okay, I'll read it. And then you get to Exodus. Okay, that's what's... And then the Ten Commandments. Okay, that sounds familiar. Then you get to this and, like, slavery. Okay. Am I supposed to keep reading? But if, as a pastor, I'm not going to give you any information about it, let's just be honest, this would get really frustrating and really confusing really quickly. So to kind of slow down and say, what are we really discussing? Because these will be topics that will come up again through the law of Moses. So a bunch of different things there. Two more just general points about slavery, what this is and what it was not. This was not, sixthly, kidnapping. This was not abduction. Keep in mind the context of chapter 20, thou shalt not steal. And I talked about if it can be stolen, don't steal it, right? We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Oh, by the way, here in this very same chapter, chapter 21, Exodus, verse 16, he who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. Oh, so this wasn't like, you're now my slave, tough luck. No, that guy's put to death. That's a capital crime. Oh, that adds quite a bit of light to it, doesn't it? Like, oh, so it's just normal slavery. Not even remotely close. Final thing, number seven, just general comments about this. Both sides benefited. Both sides benefited. The master and the bond slave. The master and the bond servant. Both sides benefited. And I'm sure there's some connotations to what I'm about to say here, but it's kind of a hybrid of indentured servitude. And I know there's things to discuss with that. We're not going to do that now, but it's kind of a hybrid of indentured servitude and an apprenticeship. An apprenticeship. This is covenanted labor. I'm going to agree to do this for 6 years. I've got debt to pay. This is the only way, man, I'm going to stay alive. Would you be willing to help me? Yes, I will. I will bring you into my home. I will feed you, clothe you, provide a family for you. I will house you. I just need you to do these things for me. G. Campbell Morgan, the great expositor of Scripture, said it this way. Henceforth, the condition of slaves among the Hebrew people would be in marked distinction to slavery as existing among other peoples. It was the beginning of a great moral movement. So, bunch of stuff there. I hope that helps set the table for what we're reading here. If you buy again verse 2, a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free and pay nothing. If he comes in by himself, verse 3, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. Verse 4 says, if his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. So he goes into this kind of home of this rich master, and he agrees to this 6 years, and there's someone else that, hey, who's the cutie over there? Well, she's in the same kind of situation as I am, and she's got a couple years, whatever, because it would be the same thing. She'd have, you know, the 6 years and the seventh. It's like, well, we're married now. Can she go out? Not quite yet. Verse 3, as it says, if he comes in by himself, literally by himself would be with his back. It's pretty similar to our English expression, nothing but the shirt on my back. You just kind of arrive, hey, what do you got to show for yourself? My back. Which is to say, I can do the labor you need me to do. I'm able to do this. That's what I have. This is someone in absolute dire straits. So we don't really like the way verse 4 reads a whole lot. Let's just say it. But our present culture, again, is nothing like this ancient culture. And she would have to fulfill, simply put, her obligation of time as well. Verse 5 says, but, contrast. But if the servant plainly says, notice this, please, it's critical we get this in verse 5. This really sets the tone for the whole thing. If the servant plainly says, I love my, what? Master. That's the first thing. Not the benefits. I love my wife. That's great, obviously. I love my children. That's great, obviously. But the first thing, I love my master. I came in here with my back, and he has tended to my needs. I've been able to minister to him. I've learned some kind of a trade. I've gotten out of debt. I am no longer in extreme poverty, and he's been good to me and my family this whole time. I love my master. I love my master. And of course, yes, my wife and my children. And notice what this person says. This servant would plainly say, I will not go out free. Again, this is why I want to take the time with what this is not describing. This is a person that says, man, my master is so good to me, such a great, kind, honorable Lord. Not a slave master as any other culture would operate. I am choosing to stay with him. I am choosing to serve him. I am choosing to enjoy him taking good care of me and my family. He's a good master to me. A love for his master. And adds wonderful light to all of it, including the New Testament terminology for the doulos, the bondservant. Paul and Timothy, bondservants of Jesus Christ. What's that? It's a slave by choice. I feel like I talked about this a couple weeks ago, Sundays or Wednesdays, I don't remember now, but kind of, I am choosing to do this. I am choosing to set aside my life, my ambitions, my goals, my aims in life for the benefit of someone else. I'm choosing to make what he, my good master, wants to do the priority in my life, and I come second. It's a servant by choice. And the basis of this is what? Verse 5. I love my master. What a beautiful picture this is, quite frankly, of New Testament life. I love God. I love how good he's been to me. Thus, I want to serve him. Thus, I am choosing to serve him. And this is a public display of gratitude. Notice verse 6. Then his master shall bring him to the judges. Remember those guys? Hey, this is what he says. He shall also bring him to the door or to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl. It's a funny kind of a woodworking tool, right? Kind of a ball of wood, basically, with a spike on the end. Just, and he shall serve him forever. It's a really interesting picture because it's like, all right, somebody hold the ear. Got the awl, and here's the, you know, look out. Here's the doorpost, and don't miss, right? And back out. It's like, you are now connected. Sorry for the weird. You're now connected to this house, right? You're part of this thing by choice. Like, somebody hold him. Oh, please. No, I want to serve him. And it's a public physical mark reminding him and everyone else, I serve this master. He's so good to me. I love him so much because of all that he's done for me. I had nothing. I hope you see how this works. Like the New Testament picture that says, I had nothing, and now I have everything I could possibly need. Why would I ever leave him? Why would I ever walk away from that kind of love and honor that he's shown me? I had nothing, and he took me in. Empty, destitute, bankrupt, and he said, come on, let me help you. Yes, you serve, but let me help you. Let me provide for you. In fact, it's such a great thing that in Psalm 40 and verse 6, we read this of Messiah himself, our Christ. Psalm 40, verse 6. Sacrifice and offering you do not desire, you did not desire. My ears you have opened. That's the picture. My ears you've opened as a bondservant. It's not that I can hear now. It's opened with this awl. And further, this public display is a public display of gratitude. I have served what I have owed, paid it, yet I want to dedicate myself to my master's service and to his keeping, neither out of shame, nor debt, nor out of defeat. I love him and I love what my life has become because of him and his good care for me. It's a beautiful thing. I can go on and on about that. By the way, quick note with this too. Philippians chapter 2, right? Jesus took upon himself the form of a servant. Willing submission, willing service to someone else. We've been studying Mark's gospel, Mark chapter 10, verse 45. Right, the key verse to Mark's gospel. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Verse 7, back to this. And if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people since he has dealt deceitfully with her. Talked about this just a few minutes ago, but a couple quick notes. Marriage, not servitude, is the context. This was perhaps an opportunity for, again, as I mentioned, a father to avoid a full dowry, especially if he was in that situation where he couldn't manage that. So a breach of contract technically would have been the marriage doesn't happen. She's set for, they're engaged, so there's no funny business happening here. She's set free. And what's amazing about this, great protections were insured for the one who was wronged. This is what, you want to marry my daughter? Great, can you take care of her in the interim until that happens? Can you provide for her? She'll serve, she'll do, you know, what's needed around the house, around the property. But if he dealt, as it says there, in verse 8, dealt deceitfully with her, it's on him. And so he was to treat her like a daughter, not a slave. And there is no provision whatsoever for abuse. A lot to be said there further. Further, verse 9, if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. So that's what I mean there is he should treat her like any of his daughters. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. Like, sorry, sweetheart, you know, you get less now. That's not how that would have worked. And if he does not do these three for her, all these things for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. So it was intended, once again, to take care of human beings. Verse 12, he who strikes a man, though, so that he dies shall surely be put to death. What about capital punishment? What about the death penalty? Super biblical. I mean, we're, 12 verses removed from or into the chapter just behind or just after the Ten Commandments. Like, it's one of the first principles laid out. Is this really one of the first principles laid out here? No. Wait, no. He just said it's one of the first. No. It's not one of the first principles laid out here. This is Genesis chapter 9, isn't it? Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. Why? For in the image of God he made man. So I'm not sure the exact right way to say this. I'll just say it the simple way. Genesis precedes the law of Moses. So I guess I can say it this way, and I hope it doesn't sound the wrong way. It's essentially this. The law of Moses bows to creation. The law of Moses bows to what God established from the beginning. So this is like, well, this is just for the Jewish people, right? No, it's bowing to what God established for everyone. It's not, well, if a Jew kills a Jew, then this is what needs to happen. No, this is for everyone. Because it's pre-law, Genesis chapter 9, this is how God established it. However, verse 13, if he did not lie in wait, so it's not premeditated, but God delivered him into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place where he may flee. But if a man acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. That's an interesting phrase, from my altar. You find this, David's general, Joab. I think that it was time for Joab, old Joab, to, it's like, it's time, man. You shed enough blood, it's time. He's like, goes to the altar and like hanging onto the horn of the altar, please. Like, hey, what do we do? He's at the, get him out of there. You can't do that. This is what's happening. So again, fascinating, capital punishment. Even New Testament, Romans chapter 13, there's some discussion about this. It's a biblical concept and there's biblical provision for this. Again, the nuances of it and the specifics of it, it's an accident? Okay, it's a different story. And the altar there, the principle of punishment of murderers, there would be no refuge even at the altar. And notice that again there in verse 13, a place to flee. There'll be a place that he may flee. We'll get to this in Numbers chapter 35 as well as Joshua chapter 20, the cities of refuge. Beautiful. I'm sorry. There's so many great things with this. Like, the law is so boring. Sure. Okay. Whatever. Read it. Observe it. Look at it. The place of the cities of refuge established in the time of Joshua, those were also Levitical cities. So not only could you go there and be safe if you just stayed put in that city, but the Levites lived there too. So you'd be ministered to spiritually after this accident. I didn't mean to kill that guy. Dude, you better get out of here. They're coming for you. Well, and there would be this allowance for that. It's a whole beautiful thing, the cities of refuge. Please notice that these are sophisticated laws that are being provided, that are being instituted. Again, chapter 19 with the judges that were, excuse me, chapter 18 with the judges that were to make rulings. And those rulings were to bless and to protect society. So different, and again, it's why there's just so much to all of this, because all of the ensuing anarchy that would happen in society and societies, if everyone just killed everyone, man, that guy killed my brother, it was an accident. Well, too bad for you. I'm coming for you, man. Just the anarchy in every society that would be created. Killing one another, taking the law into their own hands. Well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I know he killed whoever, so I have to kill him right now. And everyone would just be killing everybody. It would be a total mess. In fact, it's an interesting study. I encourage you to read this book. Frank and Marie Drowned were longtime missionaries, South America, to the tribal people. And Frank Drowned wrote this book called Mission to the Headhunters. Strongly encourage this. This kind of years and years of their life's work and what they encountered, Mission to the Headhunters. And, you know, so much of like that kind of stuff still happens. And so much of society without the law of God would just kill one another. Super fascinating note with that. Somewhere in the book, he mentioned that in talking with the tribal people, they had the exact same thing that we have, guilt. Well, he killed my cousin, so it's my responsibility to go kill him. And they'd feel really guilty. Like, built into us. There's no Bible, there's no law of Moses for the tribal people in South America, but innately they said, I feel bad about it. And I was reading part of the book on the, it's irrelevant for this, but reading part of the book on a plane one time, and I was like, just reading it, working through it, and I realized, I don't feel very well. And then I realized, I was just reading the chapter about where they describe how they would, you know, headhunters, like the whole shrunken heads, kind of like the whole process of like, this guy, he lived there for all these years, and like, well, this is how they shrink heads. Like, and I'm like reading it going, oh, that's probably why I don't feel good. Anyway, this, so interesting stuff, but this is what would happen without these types of laws. Everyone would just do what he wanted to do. Everyone would do what he felt was right at the time of the judges. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes, and that's never a good thing. Verse 14, if he acts with premeditation against his neighbor to kill him by treachery, take him from my altar, he may die. If he strikes his father or his mother, verse 15, he shall surely be put to death. I'll tell you, if that happened with a kid, and you're walking through town with your dad, hey, what's going on with Jacob over there? Why are they killing Jacob? And he killed his parents. Oh, put a little bit of fear of God and death into you. You know, I think a lot of these punishments that happened, it would probably thwart a lot of further crime. beyond that, what else is happening here? Again, the value of human life. Not many kids would be mistreating their parents. So it's not just don't do the bad stuff. Ideally, the whole law would say because we want to take care of human life. Verse 16 says, he who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. Talked about that a little bit. And he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Whoa! So kill them. Yeah, that's bad news. But curse his father and mother? Death. Like, again, what happened to... Did he kill us? Because I thought I saw them. No, he cursed them. Oh. So... You want to think about what you're about to say there, right? Little Jacob, you might, you know, consider this here a little bit. And the value of life and the value of generations. Verse 18, if men contend with each other and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die but is confined to his bed, if he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. He shall only pay for the loss of his time and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed. Isn't that interesting? So, and keep reading here with some of this, but the punishment was not to surpass, not to outdo the crime itself. Again, we just saw that kidnapping is a capital crime. We see the expectation of respect through the generations. Even in Deuteronomy chapter 21, we discover that parents were to bring their disobedient children to the judges. Wasn't just in the hands of the parents, I'm going to deal with, you know, this kid myself. Contrary to much of the surrounding culture, and in so many cultures still today, parents did not have absolute authority over the lives of their children. Come back to that in a minute, because that's important even still for today. But for what's happening here in these next couple of verses, if there's a fight, punches the guy, doesn't die, but he's in bed for a couple of days while he's recovering. He has to make restitution. What is this? I mean, it's restitution for lost time. It's injury pay. Like, who pays that? Dude, you do. You're the one who punched him in the face. You're the one that grabbed a rock or something and hit him. Well, I can't. That's your fault. He can't work right now. You have to make up for this. It's interesting. It's not my fault. Oh, it's actually your fault, and you're going to take care of this. Verse 20, if a man beats his male or female servant with a rod so that he dies under his hand, he shall surely be punished. And we don't like where this is going. Notwithstanding, if he remains alive a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his property. Well, I thought this is just a different kind of... We'll come back to this as well. This is important. If men fight and hurt a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished accordingly if the woman's... As the woman's husband imposes on him, he shall pay as the judge is determined. But if any harm follows, then you shall give, here it is, life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. If a man strikes the eye of his female or male or female servant and destroys the eye, he shall let him go free for the sake of his eye. Notice verse 27, if he knocks out the tooth of his male or female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. When I was a kid, I was pretty scrappy, got in a lot of fights on the playground, and I remember getting one of my teeth knocked out. I don't remember who that kid was. Knocked the tooth out. Like, it doesn't take that much to knock out. So what's happening here, the concept is that people were to be paying attention to how they were treating one another. Now, concerning this concept of a servant's death, a slave is a person. And I think this is one of the differences with the law of Moses. Again, the value and the valuing of human life. This is a person. He lives a day or two. It provides time for them to review the case. And it actually provides parameters. All of this provides parameters to the master. You can't just treat people any way you think you want to treat them. The judges would make rulings on these things. We'll come back to a couple of these things in just a minute here. Verse 28. If an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. Like, can I? No, you can't eat that ox. You can't do it. But the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horn in times past, like, that's used to do that. It's known to do that. And it has been known to its owner. And he has not kept it confined. I know it's kind of gotten a little out of control with those horns. And I know this, and I'm not doing anything. So that it has killed a man or woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. Whoa! I mean, this is the kind of thing. Well, it's not my fault that my ox gored that person. Well, actually, it might very well be your fault. And well, has this happened before? Just a couple of times. Like, that's it. It's not like there's not a whole lot more information about it. It's actually your fault here, right? Well, I know it's my ox, but it's your fault. It's your fault. And again, intent, neglect, failure to control his animal. This is, hey man, there's responsibility here for this. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on him. Whether it is gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver. That's an interesting number, isn't it? 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. 30 shekels of silver, price for a killed servant. That's interesting for this week, isn't it? Further laws, verse 33. If a man opens a pit, if a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, it's not my fault. You dug the pit, man, right? This is how it works. The owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. What do I get out of this? Well, you just bought the donkey. It's dead. You should have covered the pit, right? Like, it's not my, it's actually your fault here. And again, what's happening, the basis of the law is take care of people and to take responsibility for your actions. Well, I only knocked out his tooth. Then you need to learn how to control yourself. But in the meantime, he's now free. Well, but we had a good thing. And who's going to do my, well, I guess you're going to have to do your own. Well, I don't like doing. Then you should have thought about that before you punched this guy in the face. Well, I was mad. And he's now free. Complicated. If one man's ox hurts another so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it. The dead ox they shall also divide. All right, you get a half. Or if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in time past, like it's just a dangerous, out of control ox, and its owner has not kept it confined, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own. Like, okay, what does this have to do with, again, part of this was so simple and so practical. There's this beauty to it because, again, chapter 18, here's these judges. Well, I don't know what to do. They would know what to do in just about any situation. Has your ox ever done that before? Yeah. Okay, well, then let's review here what's supposed to happen. They didn't just get to make stuff up. So impartial judges would have been the norm. Like, this is how we do it. This is what's happening. Last couple of comments. I'm going to spend a few minutes just wrapping it up here. Because there are some things as we look at this. Well, like, okay, a male or female servant, if they're injured, if they die, it seems like different kind of standards. And again, well, the complaint that people have, man, the popular complaint, the Bible is definitely encouraging, if not endorsing, slavery. And perhaps even the Bible is somehow encouraging or endorsing racism or bigotry or prejudice. No, that's not it at all. James chapter 2 and verse 13 tells us that judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. James 2:13. And then James 2:13 says, mercy triumphs over judgment. What's the judgment for this? What are we supposed to... Ideally, let's say this is really what I'm getting to with all of this. Ideally, there won't be the need for judgment because, hey man, take care of your ox. I mean, whatever these things, however that might be equal in today. Well, it's not my fault that whatever happened. Take care of your stuff. Take care of people. Show mercy. And when we show mercy, there's just less need for judgment. I mean, fewer people are now going to court, right? What's better than justice? Mercy. Well, there should be justice for this crime that was committed. And can I just say it because it's newsworthy and it's worth, it's truly newsworthy. Derek Chauvin, had he been merciful on May 25th, 2020, we would not be collectively seeking justice for the death of George Floyd. Whatever opinions people have of the man died in a completely unnecessary fashion. And everyone wants justice. And let me say it, rightfully so. There should be judgment, rightfully so. But what would have been better? Mercy triumphs over judgment. What would have been better is like, dude, get your knee off the man's neck. Mercy triumphs over judgment. All of this was put in place so they would look out one for another. They wouldn't demand their own way. I would think if you're reading those kinds of laws and you're taking them seriously, I need to not punch people in the face. If I knock out a tooth, that's it. Then this guy's so much for the, you know, this guy was going to serve for 6 years. Now he's free. This is no doubt why we read in Micah chapter 6 and verse 8, he has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God? He's shown you. We should know these things. And again, so much of the basis of the law of Moses is what's already established in the book of Genesis, what's established at creation. And then it's kind of fine-tuning how we're to treat one another. It's kind of like I would rather see more cases of love and mercy than the need for judgment. There needs to be justice. You know what I'm saying? Like, justice, great, important. And why? Because people do wrong. People hurt one another. But if we're working from the interest of mercy, if we're working from the interest of what the Lord has shown us to do justly, to walk the right way, to love mercy, in terms of slavery in the Bible, what God gave his people was an outline as to how to show mercy. And again, the two starting points with all of this, again, chapter 20 and verse 2, you used to be slaves in bondage. Keep that in mind, Hebrew people. You cried out to me for mercy and deliverance, and I gave it to you. How wrong would it be for a Hebrew to put another Hebrew into bondage so much so that this Hebrew brother or sister is crying out to the Lord for deliverance from their own brethren? He's shown you how you should be. And then right here in the other basis of this, in chapter 21, it's verse 5 again, is that choice to serve because I love my master. Again, it's not forced. That forced kidnapping or that abduction, that's capital punishment. It's Deuteronomy 24 that describes this about kidnapping, sell a person, this is slavery. The kidnapper shall die, and you shall put away the evil from among you. What's the Lord's opinion? It's evil to do that. Slavery, it's evil. The Bible encourages, no, it does not. And even on into, and again, I would really have loved to go on two or three chapters with it, you know, this tonight, but I think on into the next chapters, even chapters 23 and 24, we're going to read about how to treat non-Jews, non-Israelis, how to treat foreigners. Well, those foreigners, they should stay over. Yeah, but sometimes there's foreigners in our midst, and how should we treat them? They were not, and again, we'll get to this probably next week, but they're not to mistreat them. You're not to oppress them. And again, further, this would be in Leviticus chapter 19. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you. And you shall love him as yourself. Well, that person's not from here. Love them as yourself. Don't oppress them. Don't mistreat them. Love them as yourself. And the basis of all of this, it's repeated several times in the Old Testament. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. And you were put in bondage and you cried out to me. So why would you, and see what I'm saying, where we're going with this? What's the application? Hey, us people of God, us as the people of God, why would we mistreat, oppress anyone that's also born in the image and likeness of God? Why would we not, it's like just so crazy that we have to say it. Why would we not as believers just follow the teachings of Jesus and love other people? Like, why the need to mention that? But man, we got to mention it. The basis of this, you are strangers. Don't forget what you were. Don't forget how you were treated. Be better than that. The Egyptians made your life miserable. So what the law does, it doesn't come along and say, don't be that way. Don't be like those Egyptians. The law comes along and says, be the opposite of that way. So it's not just don't treat people terribly. It's take care of people. It's like there's negative. You're treating them terribly. Then there's the neutral. Well, I'm not treating them terribly. Slow clap, right? Good job not treating anyone terribly. Like, we're called to love people, value people, honor people. That we even need to say it. May our treatment of others have a simple basis, like the foundation of how we treat people be from the basis of decency, this basic common courtesy and consideration. That should be the foundation. And then love and mercy and blessing should be built upon that. I don't mention this very often, but I'm always concerned. You know where I'm concerned? Sunday afternoons after church. Like in Northwest Arkansas. Like Restaurant Row and Restaurant Row, and like there's restaurants everywhere. And you know who goes to lunch on Sunday afternoons? Like church people. You know who doesn't go to church? The people who work at restaurants that serve church people. And you know who's really aggravated at restaurants? Hungry people, right? Like, man, I've been waiting in line for like 10 minutes and I'm really, and like, I always cringe when like you're around church people that are rude to their servers, like, oh goodness, and God bless you. And they leave like a 5% tip, you know? Treat people good, right? And just go out of your way to treat people with love and courtesy and respect. And man, in our nation, that we could be what we're supposed to be. We as believers could be that light. I know a Calvary Chapel pastor in New York. He's a white guy. His wife is Asian American, and therefore their children are Asian American. He put something on social media recently where he's noticed, and you know, a lot of what's happening in the Asian community in America right now, pretty terrible. But so this Calvary pastor, he noted that of late, when his wife leaves the house, she's wearing a little bit bigger mask, bigger glasses to hide her face. So she's walking around in New York. People don't give her a hard time because it's 2021 and people in the United States of America. That's just one example. This is like one community giving Asian Americans a hard time. And like, I take a lot of this personally. Like, best friend in grade school, best friend in high school, Asian Americans. This sounds funny too, but my cousin, Brendan Sullivan, which is really funny to say, he's a Sullivan. He's an Asian American. He's Korean. My aunt and uncle adopted Bren, and so he's a Sullivan, but you wouldn't, you know, he's got a good Irish name, but it's like, man, hey, church, can we love people and value people and go out of our way, again, not just to not mistreat people. That's nothing. Is that we need to start from a place, I want to say this funny, I'll make sure it's clear too, start from a place that's higher than the law. Whoa, higher than law, what do you mean by that? I mean that love is the fulfillment of the law, right? If we start from the place of love, you're not going to have anyone say, don't punch people in the face. Why'd you knock that guy? Well, he had it coming. That's not how love works. You don't have to tell people in love to not punch people in the face. But if we're operating from mercy and this desire for justice and this desire for humility and, again, common courtesy and consideration for other people, we shouldn't even have to discuss these things. They should come naturally to us. There was an old Christian group in the 1990s. Some of you guys remember the name of this band. The band is called Out of the Gray, and they wrote this song called Love Like Breathing. Great little tune, but the main line was, I want to love like breathing, spontaneous like breathing. Like if we would be so close to our Jesus that we would have, verse 5 said, I love my master. Of course I want to follow him. Of course I want to bless him. Of course I want to do what's right in his household. If we would love people like it's so just natural for us to breathe, inhale, exhale, love that way, man, if we could do that, there wouldn't be a whole lot of need for law. And all the way back to it, that's the point. Thus the law, here's how to treat other people, not just how to avoid punishment, but to do right, to show value to others because God values you. Last thing. Apparently I have a lot to say about this. 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 9 says, this is from the New Living Translation, "For the law was not intended for people who do what is right." The law is not intended for people who do what's right. "It is for people who are lawless and rebellious, who are ungodly and sinful, who consider nothing sacred and defile what is holy, who kill their father or mother or commit other murders." Kind of half of what we read tonight. And it's fascinating that it's worded that way in 1 Timothy 1:9. Who are lawless and rebellious. Not just commit lawlessness or rebellion. They are that way. They are ungodly and sinful. That is for whom the law was given. The law is for people, this is 1 Timothy 1 verse 10, who are sexually immoral or who practice homosexuality, or who are, this is amazing, who are slave traders.
Whoa.
That's who the law is intended to challenge. The law does not, cannot make anyone holy. It simply reveals that you are unholy. The law intending to value and preserve human life was therefore a threat to those who disregarded and devalued other human beings who are created in the image and likeness of God. And so again, even some of these laws concerning the death of a servant, though they seem odd to me, there's still some real world aspects to all of this even today. Well, the death of a servant, that seems like, shouldn't that person be put to death? Well, there's some practical, like we don't like this. Well, the servant got killed, so shouldn't something happen? Yeah, there should be restitution made for that. Think about a workplace accident or even a fatality today. A person died at work. It's no one's fault. It just was an accident. And what happens? Well, there's punishment. There's judgment. There's justice. There's usually a fee. That company is often fined. Isn't that weird? Like we read this, man, there shouldn't be money. There should be justice. Well, we still do that today. And I think you've probably seen these road signs. You ever see those road signs that say, this is the craziest thing, like you're driving through a construction zone, hit a worker, it's a $10,000 fine, and you lose your license. Like, driving, why didn't I just read? The idea would be, don't hit people with your car, right? Like, it's not why I didn't know that servant, public servant was working. I didn't, well, you hit them. I didn't do it on purpose. No, we check the case, we realize that you did not do it, and that person is unfortunate, and you're fined, and you might lose your license. You think, that person should go to jail. Interesting, biblically, right? Well, that servant died. Well, shouldn't you be put to... Not necessarily. It happened while they were serving. Guy gets punched in the face, that's not service. Like, you pull over, get out of your car, and punch the guy in the face. That's a different conversation. You know, hit a servant, hit a worker, that's a different... It's not manslaughter. Nope. Not unless it was proven to be so. So again, the heart of all of this is the welfare and the well-being of other people. Just all that to say, it really sets it up for the next few chapters. So read ahead with all of that in mind. God values human life. A lot of this doesn't seem to make sense to us today, but when you put some of the real-world connotations on it, it really does. It's just obviously it's the Word of God. So to say it's brilliant is almost insulting. It's beyond that. Perfect. It's exactly what they needed then and what we need now. Lord, we thank you again for your word. As we leave here tonight, Lord, help us to just trust you, look to you, love you. And Lord, even with us following you, Jesus, we love you because you first loved us. As bondservants, we sign up to follow you. We say, yes, I want to follow you, Jesus. We are servants by choice. And so may we truly, wholeheartedly do exactly that, follow you. Even in the places in your word where it's just not abundantly clear, may we be able to just keep reading and trust that your heart is always the value and the valuing of human life. So help us, oh Lord, to love people, to be so different than how the world is. The world is just so cruel to people. May we go out of our way to shine the light and the love of Jesus in this messed up world. Use us for your glory, Lord, please. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a great night, you guys. Hope to see you on Sunday or Friday.